Welcome to the Trinity Tims, a podcast all about Europe's most successful, profitable club, a club the envy of all. We are lucky to have our gallant leaders, and there's some folk out there that just don't appreciate how lucky we have it. We live in brilliant times. The club is turning over money, record profits left, right and centre. The 2025-26 financial year is barely a week old, and we're set to pocket £16 million for Nicholas Kuhn. And we'll be able to put that alongside the money we got from Kyogo. And don't worry about it. There's a Champions League playoff coming up at the 26th, 27th August. And if we lose that because we don't have any decent players, we've always got the Europa League and Thursday nights to look forward to, followed by Sunday domestic games. So we're going to be well upbeat and cheery tonight. Don't let those pessimists, negative Nellies and all the other personal abuse that each of us get to you. So we've got Eric Knott from Ireland with us tonight. We've got James Forrest closer to home in Glasgow, and myself, Joe McHugh from Video Celt. So it's fun-loving times that we live in just now. Celtic are awash with money, loads of profit, sending fortunes to HMRC. Other clubs around the world, they're trying to balance the books and trying to stay the right side of financial sustainability. No such problems at Celtic. We've had the wise stewardship of Peter Lill passed on to Michael Nicholson. And some people might say you won't even notice the difference between the two of them. So, Eric, what's your take on the fantastic financial news this week? We're about to pocket £17 million, about £14 million profit in Nicholas Kuhn, and we haven't got a clue who's going to be playing on the wing for the Champions League playoffs. We'll need two good wingers to start and probably two coming on after 60, 65 minutes to push the game further. So how happy are you with the Celtic state of play, the business activity so far, and how high do you think those profits could soar this coming year?
I don't know, Joe, to be honest. I'm over the moon. I'm so excited about all this incoming finance that we've got. I mean, look, I'll be giving the thumbs up as well. I mean, it's just amazing. The board are just out of this world when it comes to gathering finance. It's just it's off the scale. And I mean, I just can't contain my excitement about this. I just can't. It's too much to bear, really. The fact that, you know, we've just made a £14 million profit on Nicholas Kuhn, to add that into the 2 million we had sitting in the account before the Champions League money came in. We added another £40 million to that. We've just added another £14 million in profit into that. And I mean, we're well within the 100. I mean, look, I reckon, and I've been trying to wrap my head around this for quite some time now, but I reckon the guys are on a mission to make £250 million. I reckon if they make £250 million, then they might hand the baton over to somebody younger and somebody, you know, who will come in as an apprentice and learn the trade to then take it on to £500 million. And I think that's the aim. They have to. I mean, they're just inching closer all the time to that big figure of, you know, £200 million. And like, that must be it. That has to be the goal. Let's get £250 million in and see what we can't do with it.
And so, those lucky season ticket holders, they're getting to watch a friendly against Newcastle a week on Saturday for only £25. They don't know they're living.
I know. Right. Yeah, that's. I mean, that's dirt cheap. I mean, 25 quid for you know. I mean, God be with the days when you used to be able to get that in your season ticket. But I mean, when you think about it, if these guys are pushing so hard to make this finance, they've got to find ways to do it. And that 25 million, you know, or that 25 quid to put into the coffers as well on top of the season ticket money. It's just all. It's ingenious. It's absolutely ingenious the way they do this. I'm blown away by it, and they never cease to amaze me. We're blessed. Absolutely blessed to have the board that we have.
Right, cut all that nonsense, right? Apologies for that introduction for our 1,200 subscribers. Now, it's very, the podcast is growing quite well, and we seem to have a reputation of being a bit cynical. We're not happy clappers. So James Forrest is certainly not a happy clapper. What's your take on, two things? Your take on Celtic's transfer activities so far in the transfer window, and your take on the absolute delight that I think the vast majority of Celtic supporters seem to take on financial matters while turning a blind eye to the likely team lineup on the 19th, 20th of August for a Champions League match. It just doesn't seem as if the manager's bothered, but I don't think there's many other people inside the club bothered about it. What's your realistic take on things so far now to get the rubbish out the road, James?
We're a sterling example of a support that's been gaslit for so long that a lot of people believe the nonsense. I was thinking about this in terms of doing a political essay on it on my Substack site. And I was thinking about how, if we wanted to reverse the tide of anti-immigrant nonsense that's in the media and elsewhere, that we would have to go balls to the walls in order to do it, because it's been a campaign that's been ongoing by the other side for 25 years or longer. And at every single stage of it, the centre left has given way and given way and given way and given way. And instead of fighting it, we just back off from it and back off from it and concede more and more ground to it. So it's nearly impossible to fight against, because you're doing it effectively from a sitting start. And that, I think, is what we're doing sometimes. The whole narrative around our club is about how well-run it is and about how great it is that we have all this money in the bank. But we have said repeatedly, and we've been, I wouldn't say we've been laughed at for saying it, but a lot of people don't like to hear it, that if you don't spend it, you'd be as well not having it. That it's no use sitting in the bank, that counting profits is no use because how much it goes to HMRC and everything. And every year it seems like we have the same conversation and the same arguments get put forward against us. The club is well run. The club is successful. The club is rich. What's not alike? What's not alike? I mean, my God. We've gone over our own personal lists of everything that is wrong with Celtic. Everything that could be getting done better. Everything that's no right. Everything that's run amateur hour and half-assed. And this transfer window's already started like it's going to be another example yet. And it does feel like you're pissing in the wind. It really does. Talking like this, because the whole debate is structured around the idea that we're brilliantly run and that we're this huge success and that the board must be doing something right. And when you can step back and see the holes in it, it's pretty clear that we've benefited a lot from having a really weak main opponent, main rival. We've benefited a lot for two automatic Champions League group stage qualifications. We are not going to get that lucky this year. We need to play a qualifier. Next year, we'll need to play, I think it's two, maybe even three. So again, we're playing Russian roulette. We're a half-loaded gun. And I just don't understand it. I don't understand. We talked about this last week. We have been counters and lawyers running our club. We don't have football people and we don't have risk takers. We don't have actual businessmen. The only one of them is the largest shareholder and he's content to let the bean counters and the lawyers run it. I mean, we're a very secure club, but we are very small C conservative in our outlook and we don't like taking risks and we don't like putting our full strength forward. And it's hard to understand why. And you just think that eventually we're going to run out of road. Ange put us in a very strong position in his first two transfer windows. I thought that all we would have to do was go into the following summer, sign a couple of players, and build on that foundation, and we never did it. First, Mark Lowell came along and started picking his project signings, and then Peter became chairman, and within like weeks of all being announced, we'd sold Giakoumakis and Juranovic. We'd replaced one, but not the other one. And it's been like that ever since. The transfer window two summers ago was an utter fiasco because we had a guy picking the team who doesn't know how to build a team or construct a tactic and didn't take into account what Rodgers wanted. And we can say this till we're blue in the face. Last week we were on here and we talked about Inamura signing and how it made no sense whatsoever and how it was clearly a project signing. And then Rodgers only went and confirmed that on Friday. But you know, he clearly didn't sign him. He clearly doesn't fit into Rodgers' plan anywhere. So who did sign him and for what purpose? He's 23. He's too old to be considered a project player who we can send out on loan for a few years and hope comes back to the finished article. That won't happen. He will never play for Celtic. He will never make a first team appearance. So what the hell are we doing? And the more you say this, the more people come back with the same arguments. We're well run. We've got money in the bank. Because we've been hearing that for over a decade. It's very hard to get people to think any other way. Very hard. And we are, to a certain extent, pissing in the wind. And I fear it is going to take a disaster to wake some people up. A disaster. A season where we win nothing.
I think it's almost impossible for Celtic to go through a season and win nothing. We saw it a couple of years ago during COVID, but if it was shaping up that way, there would be some criticism from the stands. It doesn't take too much for chance about with the surname Lil included in it. So I suspect we'll be winning trophies, but we all agree, and there's a reasonable number, not a majority, nowhere near a majority, but we all agree the only benchmark for Celtic is Europe, is the Champions League. Being in top in Scotland, it's great fun, it's a good laugh, it's to be celebrated and enjoyed, and it was very painful losing the Scottish Cup final to Aberdeen. But the only benchmark is Europe. And you get a more accurate benchmark now, because if you go into the Champions League, you get 8 matches against 8 opponents. You can't really say you get a bad draw. When you've got 8 teams, 2 pot 4, 2 pot 3, if you're in reasonable shape, you should be doing quite well. So, Eric, one other thing. Ben Negren is a great signing. I don't think anyone will argue against that whatsoever. He's an emerging Swedish internationalist. He looks to have a bit about him. He did an unfortunate time. The first time he left Sweden, he's found his feet in Denmark, and Celtic looks a perfect place for him to move on again and get his career moving in the right direction. So that's a genuine compliment. That is Celtic working well. Whoever discovered that, whoever got that deal done, well done. Let's have more of it. So, Eric, what's your early take on things in the transfer market? I think we all suspected that we would be selling before we buy. It looks like Nicholas Kuhn will be a Como player at some stage this week. And Brendan Rodgers is making a few noises. He's very, very diplomatic. He's not at his 2018 levels. He's not at the John McGinn levels. He's learned his lessons. I suspect he realises he's fighting a losing battle. He's never going to persuade the people in charge at Celtic that there is actually another way to do something, and it's not the road to ruin. We're not going to be in administration and liquidation and reinventing ourselves at Peterhead and Annan. So, Eric, what's your take on things? And do you have anything optimistic to offer about the way Celtic are doing their activities this summer? It seems very similar to last summer.
It does, and I just want to refer to one comment just a bit back there from Maestro95, where he said, did we spend last season? How did that work out? And I assume that he is saying in that regard that because we spent big last season, and a lot of people say that we didn't get the return that we expected from the players that we spent big on, the 20 goals from Adam Ida wasn't enough, apparently, and the 10-plus goals from and assists from Arnie Ingles wasn't enough either. But I don't get the point. Did we spend and how did that work out? So what's the opposite of that? Should we just not spend? Because it might not work out. You know, I don't understand the logic to a question like that. And the point is, no, we didn't spend. Because we still turned a net profit in that transfer window. So in answer to that particular question, no, we didn't spend. And in answer to your question, Joe, 100%, this transfer window is looking exactly the same as that one so far. Because we haven't spent yet. We got money in from the sale of Jeremy Frimpong to Liverpool. That has more than covered Ben Negren's sale or purchase to our club. The money that we spent on Inamora, which, again, I'm baffled as to why we've even spent that money, and it might only be 300 grand. 300 grand isn't a lot to Celtic, but in terms of us and people like us, 300 grand is a lot of money to piss away for no good reason, as far as I'm concerned, because I don't see the logic to it. I don't need to elaborate on that because James is explained it quite clearly. There's very little logic to it. He made that point last Monday evening, and it just proves by Brendan Rodgers' reaction to that transfer exactly what we were saying. you know, Rodgers has basically said he's coming in. He's not a player who's going to fit into the squad immediately. There is a good chance that he'll go out on loan. And if that's not a signal from Brendan Rodgers that I'm not interested in this player, if he's talking about him going out on loan already, then that pretty much signals that he has no interest in this guy and it wasn't his signing. And the fact that it wasn't his signing is a worrying thing. It's a concern. It's a big concern. Because are we back to that absolute crap of signing players and foisting them on the manager and asking him to polish a turd in some cases and make something, you know, put lipstick on a pig, whatever you want, and make something out of something that can't be made something. Because that's the impression that I get. So at this moment in time, yes, Ben Negren is a first-team ready player. Obviously, Kieran Tierney is a first-team ready player. He has no backup. If Kuhn is out the door to Como next week, that means we're down another winger. Is Negren coming in to replace him? That shouldn't be the case. We should be getting another winger or two on top of that. We know that. We've discussed that quite clearly. I wrote an article last week where I said there are 16.4 million reasons now why Michael Nicholson should be taking the finger out and actually going out and purchasing players. The money is in. And irrespective of the fact that they got that big sale, the money was there all along. Somebody contradicted me or tried to contradict me on an article yesterday and a comment and say, don't you know we only get the money in installments? So the fuck what if we only get the money in installments? It's money in the bank regardless. And we have, yeah, and we have shit tons of money in the bank. There's no reason that we should be waiting on the sale of a big player to bring players in, because we have plenty of finance to bring players in regardless. So these arguments from the happy clappers make no sense. It's all going back to what you just said, Joe. It's all, oh, but we're a well-run club. We have an extremely diligent board. They know what they're doing. We're always profitable. We're always, you know, we're always safe when it comes to our finances. That's it. These guys are a safe pair of hands. They're not an adventurous pair of hands. They're not a risky pair of hands. And they're not any way inclined to take a risk. They're not inclined to speculate, to accumulate. And unless we see big incomings in the next week or two, we are sending Brendan Rodgers into this Champions League qualifier with one hand tied behind his back. We did not replace Kyogo Furuhashi in the January transfer window. If we do not replace Nicholas Kuhn adequately, irrespective of Ben Negren being bought in, then, you know, Michael Nicholson has done nothing in the last year or so but weaken the squad. From what, at the start of last season, was a very strong squad with a decent bench and a decent backup squad available. And now that squad, because you did an article on it today, Joe, there's a talk of 12 to 13 players being moved out as well in this window. Are we just stripping the squad bare and leaving the manager with the bare minimum? Well, I guess that remains to be seen, but we'd want to get the finger out and we'd want to start moving rapid on getting the replacements in for the players that have been sold off and the level of player that we require to qualify for the Champions League in a few weeks' time. That's my view.
Eric, if you can check through the comments and kick Buffalo Albert's well into touch.
I see him.
I think he's named after two famous Catholic footballers. None of them ever achieved too much, but if you can search through and just delete him. Yes, James, over to you.
He's gone.
He asked an interesting question, so I'm going to answer it. And it's not the one about us having to buy before we can sell. He's been a sarcastic prick there. But he asked if we enjoyed the Boyne celebrations. I always enjoy the Boyne celebrations, especially when it's pissing down. Especially when somebody's doing it, Lee Harvey Oswald at the mall, when they're walking. I particularly enjoyed the year of the intra loyalist feuds when they were all punching the living shit out of each other in Glasgow Green. I really enjoyed it that year. I was walking on the Don the Tobit that year and it was glorious. But I particularly enjoy the whole twisted logic of the whole thing, the whole we are marching on these streets because these streets are ours and we are free, and free from what? Free from Rome and control of the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church who held a mass for the Protestants and William of Orange in battle. The Catholic Church that helped to fund William of Orange's army for geopolitical reasons you guys don't know and don't care about because you're thick. Absolutely thick. Everything you think you know is a lie. Everything you think you believe is false. The universe you've surrounded yourself with is based on misunderstandings and half-truths. Okay. You're celebrating one of the most significant geopolitical triumphs. You are morons. That's why I always enjoy it.
So we've got a couple of happy clappers on board tonight as well. There's one guy, San Fran Celtic, saying it's ridiculous to write off in a movie. Well, San Fran Celtic, there's a brilliant Celtic blog I can recommend for you. In January 2024, one Celtic blogger was telling Brendan Rodgers how we should build a side around a guy called Kwon that played a couple of good games for St Mirren. And there's another fantastic Norwegian midfielder called Holm. And apparently Brendan Rodgers should have based last season's Champions League midfield on Kwon and Holm. So there's a website for all that sort of stuff. You won't really get much change out of us on it. James, turning to football matters. yep, we are going to turn to football matters. So the league season kicks off. The first league game is 4 weeks today. So just over 6 weeks to the Champions League opener. As things stand, we've got your namesake, James Forrest, who is good for a turn, is useful, but I wouldn't be starting him in Champions League playoffs. And we've got Yang. Yang has been at Celtic for 2 seasons and achieved very little. I think there's half a dozen decent substitute appearances, a couple of goals when his girlfriend was over here, and apart from that, very little. Laila Bada achieved a hell of a lot in 2 years. Some of our better players have been and gone in 2 years. Kuhn's been and gone in 18 months. So how concerned should Celtic be at the position, the number of wingers, the options that they have for a very important part in Brendan Rodgers' team plans? And the pre-season is underway. The first pre-season friendly has been played and the real stuff isn't too far away. 4 weeks today, we can be talking about St Mirren. So do you see these positions being solved? Do you think there's any urgency that anyone's taken at Celtic Park to get these done? Or will it be all right in the night and we'll finish a couple of points above our old firm business partners?
I think in terms of replacing Kuhn, we will definitely do that before that game. Because we seem to have a rather extensive list of targets for that side of the pitch. We've clearly anticipated this moment, and for once, we seem to be ready for it. Although I don't know why we don't just sign somebody just now, before he's left. Because that doesn't make any sense. It's Celtic being small C conservative. I think they're worried that Nicholas is going to come down the stairs or something and trip over one of his kids' toys and break his leg, and then the deal will be off and we'll not get the money and we'll have signed the player and what do we do now? But once the deal is signed, I think they will go and we will sign one of the several players that we appear to have spoke to and agreed terms of his club or whatever. So I think that position will be filled. I don't know whether or not we'll get a striker. We need one desperately, I think. But whether we get that done, I have no idea. That one might go to the wire. That one might go to the final day. And we'll be scrambling about desperately if our first choice decides he doesn't want to sign or wants to go somewhere else. I'll tell you at this point right now, the days when we should be sitting and waiting on a target, making up his mind on the final day, that better be over and done with. There better not be any of that nonsense this year. Because we've done that far too many times. The furthest out for that deadline we should be is a week at the very most. And if the guy's not made his mind up by then, then tell him go and bolt and go and get somebody else. We can't be wasting too much time. So I mean, really, we're playing the SPFL, right? So in terms of domestically, it probably really isn't going to matter much whether we get the first choice or the second choice. So in Europe it might matter. That may be a more significant question in Europe. But if we're waiting to the last day till we make see if he gets an offer for an club, we're playing with fire and we're gonna get burned again. So I don't think we should be waiting too long for people to make their minds up. The striker one is the hard one. I'm convinced that we'll replace Kuhn. Don't worry about that. That's not an issue. Whether we strengthen any other part of the team, I think we might. There's a couple of weeks left. But the striker's going to go all the way, I think. It's going to go. It's going to be close to the end before we know who that is. Because the guys who have been named, publicly named, that we've made bids for, a lot of those guys seem to be talking to other clubs. You know, Chris Garden, I don't even care about. And now I was never in favour of that deal anyway. That was a Mark Law, back of the fag packet target. That harkens back to his time at the club. And I never thought that Brendan would ever have trusted anything that was on his wee sheet of paper anyway. So I was never keen on that signing. Strelick has a better record, but if he's talking to Ajax, realistically, we're not going to get him. Dominic Calvert-Lewin, please. I mean, really. Let the club on the other side of the city chase fantasies like that. We're better off avoiding. I suspect that the striker will be somebody that none of us has ever heard of. It will be one plucked to thin air. But as long as he fits Rodgers' style of play, I'll take it. I'll happily take it. Rodgers knows what he wants, the type of player that he wants. That's why when he picked Adam Ida, and the first thing that he said in the press conference, or on the welcome to Celtic, on the Celtic official site, was that he had pace and power. I thought, right, okay, Rodgers knows where he's staying here. I'll trust that. Rodgers knows where he's staying. Then wasn't he happy about the signing because we didn't have a right to buy, having foreseen what would happen there, and is having to go scrambling for the deal to get done and peeled over the odds. But I trusted Rodgers. As soon as I saw that they were the criteria that Rodgers signed him for, I thought, right, you fit, you'll do. And as long as Rodgers gets to tick off his boxes, I'll be happy, whoever it is. But that one will probably go to the final day. I can see that happening. Probably shouldn't he, but it will. So there won't be a striker by the time the season kicks off. No way. We might, if Rodgers pushes for it, get one in before the Champions League. I'm not counting on it. That's a more complicated deal than any of the other ones we're working on. Another better question would be, who the hell are we going to sign in midfield? Because there's a lot of options there. And I know Oyes have a certain type of player in mind, right? But if we sign Lennon Miller, as some people have suggested, then we can't sign the big, hard, ball-winning midfielder that would allow Rodgers to change the tactics and stuff. I don't know. Difficult.
Yep. This is why you do planning in advance. sorry, Derek. I know it's a bit of an alien concept.
In terms of Celtic.
Yeah. Well, they knew plenty of time in advance that Kyogo was kicking up merry hell at Lennox Town, desperate to leave. 6 months down the line, there's still no sign of a striker, unless you want to include Callum Osmond in that. I'm sure San Fran and all the happy clappers and balance sheet boys will be telling you that Callum Osmond is actually the new Moussa Dembele, simply for the fact that he came from Fulham. There's a lot of this revisionism.
Oh, yeah, I'm getting that all the time, yeah.
If there's any slight comparison with someone that's been successful in the past, then that success is just going to be naturally repeated. So there's a lot of nonsense going on. Eric, do you think Brendan Rodgers will have 4 trusted wingers to play in this Champions League qualifier? It could be as early as the 19th of August, and ideally you want these guys to be in the door a fortnight in advance. So will we have 4 recognised wingers to start against St Mirren and then be flying for the Champions League qualifier just over 2 weeks afterwards?
No, we won't. if you want my honest answer. I did notice today, all right, that there was rumours of this Swede, another Swede, Isaac Jensen from Rapid Vienna. They're going back to the Kuhn well and going back to the, you know, position that was replaced by this guy Jensen when Kuhn left Rapid Vienna. Don't know much about the guy, but then again, I suppose I didn't know a whole pile about Nicholas Kuhn before he came in. So it remains to be seen whether or not this guy is this guy will materialize into anything serious. But at the pace we're dragging our feet at the moment and the glacial pace that any transfer business moves at Celtic, I don't see us having four first team ready wingers in place come the first game of the season anyway. That's not to say that we won't by the end of the transfer window when we go to an away game and Peter Lawwell gets a bashing from the fans and that's all staged and something like that happens, then maybe the guys might pull the finger out and they might decide then that they need to rush in the last 48 hours of the window and bring in a load of players which they have to pay way over the odds for. At the risk of repeating myself, do these guys ever learn? Because you'd think in any line of business that when you make mistakes, when you mess up, you learn from your mistakes. Are you prepared in advance of the next time that you have a shot at something like that to not make the same mistake again? And look, I could be wrong here, but like you, Joe, I'm at last half full, man, when it comes to our board. And even at that, I don't think it's half full. But they just don't give me any signal or any sign that they're going to do any different to what they always do. And it's very hard to expect anything different. Because the Celtic board is definitely the definition of insanity. Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting, different results, because the results are always the same. And it goes back to what you were saying earlier on. I mean, nearly all of the Ange Postecoglou signings that were successful, solid signings, are gone from the club now. And it seems to me, and I wrote an article on it last year, and I got a hammering for that too, that the board just seems to be hell-bent on asset stripping our squad all the time of the best assets that we have. The problem is, of late, that they're asset stripping and they're not replacing like for like. They rarely replace like for like anyway. But there seems to be more and more gaps opening up in the squad, and there seems to be less of an inclination to fix and fill those gaps. And we all said last January when Kyogo Furuhashi went and the replacement didn't come in that the board would think they were geniuses when they pressed Brendan Rodgers into moving Daizen Maeda into the middle. Daizen Maeda did exactly what we expected he'd do when he was moved into the middle, but it still didn't solve our problem with regards to a striker. We still don't have that striker. Callum Osmond isn't that striker. So, I mean, it's pretty simple. We need an experienced centre-back. We need an experienced defensive midfielder who's a hard man. We need four wingers, four first-team ready wingers. And we need a striker. That's it. Brendan Rodgers, look, he's the man in charge. He knows that's what we need. He's no fool. He's not in the position he's in from, without having the experience that he has. He knows exactly what we need. But you wonder, does he go to these guys and say to them, this is what I need. These are the players I'm looking at. Can you go off and get them for me? Because that doesn't appear to be the case. Instead, he's handed players like Inamura. Did he sanction bringing in Callum Osmond? No, he did seem to speak highly about the kid when he came in, but at the same time, was that his? What have we got this guy, the football doctor, for? What's he doing? Has he had anything to do with Inamura? I don't know. Club doesn't communicate with us, so we're never going to know for sure what goes on anyway. But it's just frustrating. It's just the same crap every transfer window. We have the same conversations. It's like a deja vu. It's all those cliches, say everything you want to say, it's Groundhog Day. That's it. Celtic transfer Groundhog Day. That's what it is.
I'll be honest, I have a bit of sympathy for where we found ourselves this year. Because this has been a bit of a weird situation. On the left-hand side of the pitch anyway, I think there were people at Celtic Park who held out hope for a lot longer than probably was necessary. That Greg Taylor would be convinced to stay and be Tierney's backup or a rotation player, whatever you want to call it. I think we had a fallback, had Jeffrey Sloot played better and looked more like a guy who would have been a good backup. But he kind of faded towards the end and was quite disappointing in the overall. And so I think we got a raw deal with the left-back position and knew we have to find a find a replacement for Taylor, which we didn't expect to have today, I don't think. And I think we probably thought that if Sloop had a good half a season, that he'd be a ready-made replacement on a free, just get him to sign the deal and it's done. So, disappointment there. The Jota injury is a catastrophe. Especially in terms of his recovery period being so fucking terrible. Because you could see the sense, and I was bringing in a loanee to play on the left until Jota's back in the team, but we have no idea when that will be. So do you go out and sign a left-sided midfielder? Because we do need a left-sided midfielder to provide cover if Maeda's going to play as a central striker. That's a given. You need a left-sided player now. And I think you need a second left-sided player as a backup anyway. So I would go out and I would sign one. I think we should go out and sign another left-sided midfielder. Regardless of whether Maeda's playing through the middle or not. But I think that it's the Jota injury that really screwed up a lot of the thinking. Because I think that Rodgers would just have went out and bought a striker. That would have been the decision. Maeda will go back to the left. Him and Jota will alternate. Or Jota will play on the right sometimes, whatever it was. But that was the left side covered. The right-hand side, we knew we needed to sign a player wide right. So we went and we got Nygren, and that would have been enough. Except Nukun wants to leave. So now we've got to replace him as well. And I think I have a certain amount of sympathy because I think it's been a bit more screwed up than they thought it was going to be because it would have been straightforward to Jota not get injured. And now it's a mess. And we're back to the drawing board in a very real sense because we really didn't have a lot. In the tap end of the pitch, I didn't think we really had a lot we had today. And now we do again. That's just, it must be frustrating for everybody at the club, the Jota injury, because that's what's changed the thinking. Suddenly you've got multiple positions to have to fill instead of just shuffling it like you were going to, replacing players that leave, and it's a bit more complicated than it was supposed to be. The whole left-hand side of the pitch is a mess. God alone knows what we're going to do with it, but we have to do somewhere. We need a second left-back. We need one, maybe two players to play it wide, depending on what you're going to do with Maeda. But it's a lot more complicated than it was.
Yeah, that's all fair enough. But Jota was injured towards the end of April. A well-run club would have a couple of plan Bs. And the minute Jota was injured, Nicholas Kuhn and his agents have been told, unfortunately, mate, you're going to have to stay here until at least January. But that's a sort of football thing.
That's what we don't ever do. We don't ever put our own priorities first. Player wants to leave, he's allowed to leave. We don't ever, to the best of my knowledge, tell a player, look, you've signed a long-term deal and we cannot let you go right now and you're staying and that's it.
Right. I see somebody asking about young academy wingers. Right. If anyone can give me an instance of somebody coming from the sixth tier of Scottish football and playing in Champions League qualifiers, please get in touch. There is nothing in the academy. There's nothing in the B team. Anyone that's got any prospect of making it into the Celtic first team has to go out and loan. So we can close that down. I'm reluctant to answer Happy Clapper San Fran, but he made some comment that elite players won't come to Scotland. Correct. Tomorrow is Monday. Elite players have never come to Scotland. Henrik Larsson was far from elite when he came to Scotland. But in the summer of 2021, Ange Postecoglou, with the help of his agent, Frank Tromboli, was able to bring some very, very decent, very useful players to Scotland. Lyle Abada, Carol Starfelt, Kyogo, Giakoumakis, Joe Hart. He made a blunder with McCarthy. I suspect McCarthy wasn't his option. And then once he'd assessed things, towards the end of the window, he brought in Cameron Carter-Vickers, Giakoumakis and Jota. So you can bring decent players to Scotland. There was no promise of Champions League football. Celtic went out very early in a qualifier that year. But those players all came to Scotland, all came to Celtic, this apparent backwater, and they quite enjoyed themselves. They worked under a good manager. They developed their games. and almost all of them have moved on to bigger salaries, which is the bottom line for most players. Compare that, San Fran, with what happened 2 years ago. Brendan Rodgers, bizarrely, was taken on by the sales pitch from Michael Nicholson, and he was presented with 7 permanent signings. Absolutely horrendous. I'll name the 3 wingers, Telio, Palma, and Yang. Yang started 13 games last season because it was a last resort. The defenders, Naroki and Lagerbielke. Naroki's out on loan, and Lagerbielke is probably out on loan and about to be announced as joining Braga. At least we're getting some money for him. The other players, we had a midfielder called Kwon that couldn't get a game for Hibs last season when he went out on loan. Back at Celtic, 3 years left in his contract. He'll not be born in his backside. Another midfielder, Holm. So in 2021, we managed to do some very good, some very useful business that benefited the team in the park, benefited the bank balance, and those players all moved on quite happy with their lot. They enjoyed themselves at Celtic. They won things. They played in the Champions League, and they built up a bit of a bond with supporters. Something changed, and in 2023, a guy called Mark Lowell was in charge of recruitment, and it was an utter disaster, and we're still paying the price for that. Most of those players, all those players are still clogging up the payroll, and they're contributing virtually nothing to the squad. So that's my last answer to San Fran. Go back to your favourite blog and tell everybody how fantastic the board are and how lucky we are to have them. But James, I'll turn to Eric for this one. There is another club in Glasgow, and they've been providing us with a bit of humour this week. So they delved down to the 18th best team in the English third tier, Peterborough, the team with the worst defensive record in the league, and they signed a centre-half. At first, it seemed it was a token fee of about 300,000, 400,000, maybe 500,000. But then, the day after, a couple of the messengers came out and said, £3.5 million. And then we got some podcasters from Peterborough, and apparently he's a rough diamond. He's got a lot to learn. So he's a big lad. He's 6'4". One day, the next day he's 6'5", and then he's 6'6". Disco Dave, go back to that favoured website. Share all the good news with the happy clappers. You will never, ever, ever convince us. Kwon can't get a game for St Mirren. He can't get a game for Hibs. And he'll never, ever, ever get a game for Brendan Rodgers. But Eric, what's your take on the humour at Ibrox as they're uncovering the new Tom Lawrence? They're scraping through the dregs of English football, and they're being transformed into superstars. Another interesting one, I think February, March, we were getting told that Clinton Insiala is actually Virgil van Dijk, but after today's game, Clinton Insiala was behind Leon King and Robin Proper for a match, and Clinton Insiala, signed last year from AC Milan, is not part of Russell Martin's plans. So that's what happened to last year's superstars. What was your take on the boy from Peterborough and other superb, exciting signings on their way to Ibrox?
Well, you know, before I get into that, I mean, I need to wade in on your defence because there was a comment passed earlier on, you know, about you talking about the fake over and that it's Keith Jackson 1 and you nil. I personally believe that it's still a fake over in that they're no better off than they were before the Americans came in. So, I mean, call it what you want. It's nothing spectacular, and it's certainly not going to... and this leads into what we're talking about. If this is the caliber of player that they're signing, you know, a guy from Peterborough United, and if the rumour is true that they paid £3.5 million for the kid, it's clear that they honestly saw them coming. I mean, I put up an article on it the other day there where I said that there was a guy who did a tweet on it, and he basically said that they must be dancing around the place in Peterborough for joy, knowing that they fleeced Rangers for £3.5 million. So I think the whole scenario is hilarious. When I put up, James, I followed on from an article James did there, you know, asking where they said we're shitting our pants and we must be really scared of what's coming down the tracks this season. And so I kind of flipped it in my headline in my article, and I said, if we were the ones signing League One players and 30-something journeymen, do you think they'd be frightened? Do you think that they wouldn't be laughing their heads off at that whole scenario? So how in God's name do they think that we're scared by the signings that they're bringing in, or that we're in any way intimidated by this whole situation where they're bringing in, they brought in another League One player yesterday. This is he Icelandic or Norwegian or from Luton Town anyway. He was, I don't know his name. Olsen, is it? I think it is.
Asgard. Don't laugh. Asgard. Asgard. In the same team.
Okay. Asgard and Butland, yeah, that's brilliant.
Apparently he was the one who kept Matt O'Reilly out of the Danish national team, except that he's Norwegian.
Okay.
He was the guy that replaced O'Reilly in the Danish team. Well, that would be very difficult to do.
Yeah, but I mean, how they think that we're intimidated by this is just hilarious. And as I said in my article this morning, the only thing that intimidates or frightens me is the people in our own club and their lack or their inaction. That's what, you know, is the thing that will make me more worried than anything else. So, you know, the banter years are still, they're still going strong and they're going to continue going strong. I mean, the fact that they were booed off at halftime today, like, look, I'm not going to go out there and row in on Russell Martin's behalf here. And I was kind of watching the game on and off to see what it was that he'd put out on the pitch and what they play like, you know. But, like, these guys gave us a hell of a game in the Champions League. So there's no embarrassment at being 2-0 down to them at halftime, considering you're just starting out as a new manager and you're testing out new players who come from League One and all the rest of it. But the fact of the matter that the fans booed them off at halftime, that's insane. It's just hilarious, like, that in no uncertain terms, Russell Martin is being told already that if you don't get your shit together in friendlies, we're going to get your back.
Back in the season.
Yeah.
You better get used to it.
Like, I mean, they just, their expectations. It's always like this thing. Every time you see a new player coming in, and he has the tagline in his interview, I'm here to help this club get back to where it was or where it belongs.
Second
where
place.
That?
Where you belong?
Where is that?
Congratulations, finish second, you've done it.
One more trophy better off than St. Johnston in the last 14 years, is it? I don't know. You know, where exactly are they getting them back to? Or where exactly are they returning? What past glories are they returning them to? So, like, every player that comes into the Ibrox setup is given this tagline, I'm here to put Rangers back where it belongs. Where's that? I'm lost because the previous club's dead and this club has done nothing. So, you know, yeah, long live the banter years. They're only going to get better. And they've been faked over to fuck.
James, you've picked up on the physical element that the close season cup winners have specialised in so far this week. We've seen plenty of physical players. We've seen plenty of players come up from England up here to boss it, score goals for fun. Nans League, Farmers League, etc., etc. Is there anything in any of these guys that you see and the other reported signing targets? You know, would any of these signing targets be anywhere on Celtic's radar? I know the Celtic board don't like signing players, but is there any of these guys that you'd have thought, we could maybe have done a turn with him?
Whenever they've signed players in the last few years, I've always asked myself a question. Are these guys any better than the kind of signings you would see at Aberdeen or Hearts or Hibs or teams like that? And the truth is that every one of the guys that they've signed so far would fit in perfectly at one of their clubs. That's the level of signing that they all are. The idea that they spent £3.5 million on a Peterborough defender who's notional value is 1/10 of that is ridiculous. When you see the Peterborough fans' response to him leaving on Twitter, it's even more ridiculous. In fact, the £350,000 sounds like a lot of money based on what some of them are saying about being glad to see the back of him. The midfielder who they've made two previous attempts to sign on free transfers and never got, Eric and I were bantering about him the other day. And I had to ask ChatGPT a cheeky question as to whether it was true that he had never commanded a transfer fee at any club that he's ever went to. And ChatGPT's answer was basically, well, it's not quite true, but it might as well be, because when he signed from Oxford, he signed from Manchester United reserves, so there wouldn't have been a massive fee involved there, although it would have been maybe in the tens of thousands. He left Oxford to sign for Blackburn, and I don't think there was an awful lot of money exchanged in that deal either. And effectively, he's joined them on a free, which is pretty much his career progression. So that's the kind of signing that a Hearts or an Aberdeen or a Hibs would have made, except that he's probably in a little bit too much in terms of wages, more than they could afford, but he'd have fitted in to their team. Max Ahrens is a hilariously bad signing. Hilariously bad. He's such a bad signing that I can see them persevering with the James Tavernier Maeda experiment for another season. You wait and see. That's a certainty. The winger is that is a classic Aberdeen Hearts signing. Absolute classic Aberdeen Hearts signing. And I saw the initial report on some of the Ibrox fan sites that they had paid $5 million for him, and I actually laughed at that. That is such a crazy loony suggestion that that's a $5 million player, not in this lifetime. So, I don't know how much they did pay for him. The reports say $3.5 million. I'd be very surprised if that's true. But, you know, what the thing is that we're not going to know this time because they don't have to publish detailed accounts laying any of this out. So we'll never know how much they paid for them. But they're trying to tell their fans that this has already been a £6-7 million transfer window. It's for the birds. It's absolutely nonsense. Most of these guys are loanies and free transfers. And if there are, you know, if there's money changed hands, it's very, very little of it. I was really interested today to hear his answer on Jamie Vardy. Look, it's obvious to me that they're going to try and pull a spectacular, right? What they think is a spectacular. But if they want to overpay a 38-year-old to come here on an extended holiday and top up his pension pot, that's up to them. That's the kind of loony thing that I expect them to make. And the press will dress it up as great business and all that, and what a fantastic signing and how it will raise the profile of Scottish football. It will raise his bank balance. That's all it will do, really. I'm certainly not going to lose any sleep over that 38, 39-year-old Jamie Vardy at Ibrox. So when you think about where they were just a couple of months ago, talking about Ancelotti's boy, Ancelotti Jr., was going to come and revolutionise the playing style, and he was going to have all these wonderful ideas about Brazilian players and South and Central American players and the best of the Real Madrid Youth Academy. Now they're trying to get excited about League One signings. I mean, it's who are they trying to convince, us or themselves? I think they're trying to convince themselves. They sure as shit convincing me. I don't see any fear there. There are Ibrox teams that have been built with various spare parts over the years, like the one that Cassinia tried to build. Right, that on paper looked like a scarier side than this one does, on paper. But there's no question that he's got a type. He's trying to bring in a bunch of big guys over 6 feet who he hopes will have the physicality to intimidate the rest of the teams in the league. And he may get away with that. You never know.
Will that level of physicality, feed into his playing the ball on the ground and playing out from defence and possession game?
I hope he knows what he's doing, because any good team that can play counter-attacking football will absolutely strip them. Absolutely strip them. Apparently, Bruges did that the day we eased in the first half. Scored twice and hit the post and on. Should have been out of sight at halftime. And then took off what few first-team players they actually started the game with and put on a side not unlike the one that we had against Queen's Park the other night. A good counter-attacking team, a good European team will absolutely rip that side to shreds. I've no doubt. I have no doubt about that at all.
We had one question there asking about Dyson Maeda and the suggestion that he apparently wants to move. Nobody has got a clue what Dyson Maeda wants to do. If you watched any of his Celtic TV interviews last year, he doesn't give too much away. It's like Brendan Rodgers. Rodgers was asked at Tannadice after winning the league, and he just says, very, very few people know what I'm thinking of, what my plans are. So we've no idea what Daizen Maeda's thoughts are. He's got a World Cup finals to play at next summer. That could mean he wants to stay at Celtic, or it could mean he wants to see if there's something better elsewhere to test himself at. So no one really knows. There's very few journalists or reporters that are in the know. Some of them get fed messages from Celtic and pass it on, but I don't think there's any journalist that really knows the intentions of any current Celtic player. I don't think any of them confide in reporters. They see them a couple of times a year at media conferences, and they're fairly trivial and things. So a couple of podcast things. We're up now to 1,200 subscribers. Thank you very much for everyone that's done that. So if you subscribe, please click on the bell, which gives you notifications. This week's a bit of a one-off. We're on a Sunday, but the intention will be during the season, it'll be Monday at 6:30. That's where we're going forward. The more likes, the more comments, the more thumbs up, the more shares, YouTube likes all these things, and it bumps you towards the top of the tree. So, and again, there's lots of comments during the show. If the people that have been on with us live, if they can go back afterwards and add a comment, that'll appear. And again, YouTube likes all these things. So we've got a few minutes left. Eric, Celtic are over in your part of the world on Tuesday. What are you looking for from the game against Cork? And then the action, it gets a bit more serious. We're heading over to Portugal. It'll be absolutely baking. They'll be training pretty extensively. There's a friendly on Saturday against some local side. And then we'll be back next Monday. And then there's Sporting Lisbon. So the quality of opposition will soon be stepping up. And equally, the training conditions will be a bit more demanding. So what are you looking for against Cork and in the next week or so from Celtic?
Well, against Cork, I mean, I would hope that we'd win that one fairly comfortably. It's going to be a friendly, obviously, like similar to the Queen's Park game. A lot of players are going to get a run out. And, you know, obviously the game against Queen's Park wasn't a very high-scoring game. Johnny Kinney scored the one and only goal in that game. I would hope that the game against Cork will be a bit more high scoring, that we will possibly get three or four goals in that game. Obviously, being my neighbouring county, and a club from my neighbouring county, I'd like to see them do well too, but Celtic's my team, so at the end of the day, I want them to win. A lot of guys from RCSC are travelling up to it. It's only an hour and a half drive away, so they'll all be headed up to Parkie for the game. I'm on holiday, so I'll miss it. But you know, I think they need to give a lot of the player. You know, a lot of Nigrin needs to get a good run out as well, I think. And I think Brendan needs to assess his squad and see where it's at now. He needs to get more goals out of them. And as you said, they're going to go over to Portugal. It's going to be pretty hot over there. It's going to be a tough environment to play in. And look, it's a good look. That kind of environment is always hard to play in that kind of heat, but it's a good way to get fitness levels up and for fellas to shed any extra pounds they might have put on the summer holidays. They won't be long coming off over there. But yeah, look, keep them coming, ticking fast now. And we need to just... We had a great pre-season last season. We played against top quality clubs and we had some top quality results. We need more of the same this time around. But at the same time, we need more new faces in to get them blooded in and to get them in for pre-season and to have them in a position where they are possibly able to contribute something to our Champions League qualifier when that comes up. Now is the time. Not 2 weeks, not 3 weeks, not 4 weeks. Now is the time. And that's, I can't understate that anymore. We have to get, if we're getting these players that Brendan Rodgers believes that we're going to get in, and based on the interviews he's had over the last week or so, he's confident that he's going to get replacements in. Do I trust Brendan's confidence? I'd like to. I just don't trust the board. That simple. But we need to get these players in and we need to get them in for a preseason. It's that simple.
Disco Dave and all those happy clappers, please pile in with the comments. Later on tonight, put on all your comments. Tell us all how negative we are. And don't forget that first 5-6 minutes. But come November, unfortunately, Celtic hold an AGM. It's the one day a year that your corporate heroes can't hide. There'll be a Q&A session, and unfortunately, I'll be there. I've asked your heroes a few awkward questions. You're the hero, the ultimate hero of all the happy clappers, the supreme accountant. He didn't like it very much. I wasn't even asking him a question last year, and he decided to give my website incredible publicity. So thank you, Peter. Apparently, I got an unhealthy obsession. Other people call it scrutiny. But James, what's your expectations, hopes for the next week in terms of the friendly matches, and perhaps we might see a new set? We should see Ben Na Grane, I would have thought, against Cork. What's your hopes for the next couple of weeks, Celtic-wise?
Well, Disco Dave had a good point. When he was talking about last pre-season, we got a glimpse in the last pre-season of what we were going to see from Nicholas Kuhn for the first 6 months of the campaign, because he was on a different level during pre-season last season. And this is where this is where my disappointment is, and not getting some business done early, because there is a chance if you get business done early, you bring some players in, that one of them just sets a heather and fire on pre-season. You think, right, this guy, I cannot wait to see this guy in competitive games. And that's how I felt all last season watching Nicholas Kuhn in pre-season, because it was like watching a different player than the one we saw. Like a completely different player, and at least two levels up for the guy that we'd watched in his first 6 months. And I'm disappointed that we're not going to see that version of Nicholas Kuhn this year. But we should, for some of the games, be watching Nicholas Kuhn's replacement. And I just hope that we can get a deal done very quick. I expect to get a deal done quickly on that, but it depends how quickly. On terms of the guy that we're looking at, the Rapid Vienna guy, he was signed as a direct replacement for Kuhn at Rapid. So they were trying to replicate Kuhn's skill set exactly. So they did it right. And us going there and buying the guy that they bought, I think is really smart, because you're getting a photo fit, exact same type of player. So that's good. And I wouldn't be disappointed to see that deal getting done. I would like the boy for Antwerp, Mer, because he just strikes me as more experienced and whatnot. But, you know, I expect us to get a player on that side of the pitch. But pre-season should be a chance to watch all the new players and for them to learn the system and all that. And that's what's really frustrating, because you never seem to get that at Celtic. You never seem to get players getting the chance to bed in before they're through any first-team football. I'm looking forward to seeing Na Grane. I think he ticks all the boxes for us. I wouldn't be surprised if Brendan plays him more as a number 8, but for some of these games, because we looked so poor in the final third after Hatate got injured, and we didn't look like we had anybody in the team who could step in and play that position. So I think this guy's been signed to fulfill multiple roles in the team. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him playing as a number 8 at some point. I think I'd like to see the boy for film start against Cork. It will piss off my fellow Adam Ida fans. But we need to see what the guy can do, and you need game games for that. John Kenny played reasonably well against Queen's Park. Rogers said after it that everybody at Celtic wants Kenny to be a Celtic player. But the impression you get is maybe just no yet. He's not quite there yet. I don't know whether that's a response to reports that we would take £1 million if it was offered for him. I suspect we probably would take £1 million if it was offered. But at some point, one of these guys has to get a chance and see if he can make the breakthrough. And I think that's why we should play the boy for film. They're the two players I would most look forward to seeing. And it's also pretty good to see what Arne Engels does this season. Although I said in an article last week that the guy who's got the most to prove this pre-season is probably Austin Trusty. I'd like to see him get an extended run in the team at the start of the campaign. I'll tell you what though, we badly need to sign a centre-back, like a proper centre-back. Sign the Japanese guy and then send him on loan. We need a proper one, because we cannot be dependent on Liam Scales for another year. And much as I like Liam Scales and I think he can do a good job domestically, he cannot be the long-term answer. He cannot be the long-term backup. That's got to change. So you never know. I mean, Liam Scales can play left-back as well. I wouldn't have a problem seeing Liam Scales deputise at left-back. I just don't want to see him at central defence in the Champions League. Scary thought.
Okay, that's about it from us this week. But as well as this podcast, every day of the week you can read about the thoughts of Eric over in Read Celtic. You can read about myself on Video Celts and James at the Celtic blog. We're all three very, very independent bloggers. We don't take instructions from anyone. And this week, Celtic will be probably calling a media conference for the arrival of Inamura, and certain Celtic websites will be able to come over, join in. It might be, some of them might be on Zoom, and they'll be able to ask Inamura's translator, how much is he enjoying joining Celtic? How much is he looking forward to those special Champions League nights? And other banal questions through an interpreter, a complete waste of time. So none of us will be involved in that. None of us will shed any tears about it. But all three of us will be back again next week for the latest podcast. So thanks for your contributions. If you can, add a comment. Even if you're a happy clapper, all those comments count, and they won't change any of our opinions. Fire in, lads. All those happy clappers. Disco Dave, you lead the way.
Oh, Disco Dave reckons that he's actually hoping that we sell Dyson and we edit to see our reaction when that happens. Yep. That shows how much he cares about Celtic and Celtic doing well. He wants to see our reaction. Loads of money.
Yeah.
You know, the Harry Enfield video, isn't it?
The only thing I'm going to say about the happy clappers is that they are not the worst. By no means are they the worst of Celtic cyberspace right now. There are some people who, if their content isn't being written by AI, I would advise them to try it, because it will do a better job than them. Because I don't think that any Celtic fan gives a shit what David Murray says we won't ever do.
Okay, on that note,
guys.
Bye-bye, Disco. See you again next week. Fire in with those comments.
See you again next week, Disco. See you later.
Looking forward to it already.